Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure many of you have questions for me. The stock market in Hong Kong, of course, is a comparatively small one, so it is easily manipulated. And I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that the Hang Seng Index will be kept high. I said will be kept high. Because China is not going to lose face over the transfer of sovereignty. By seeing the Hang Seng Index keeping a high level when Governor Patton was at the helm. And yet see it nosedive when China takes over Hong Kong. No way. So the Chinese government, I'm sure, will be talking to the Hong Kong tycoons and say, now look, do what you can to keep it up. And China, of course, will pump money into Hong Kong. So that market will be high. You don't have to worry about that. But of course, a high stock index doesn't mean a sound basis of our economy. It's too simplistic. Because if you take away the rule of law, freedoms are no longer preserved. The environment is no longer healthy for investment. But don't worry about the stock exchange or the Hang Seng Index. There's a gentleman there.
Mr. Lee, what advice would you give to the U.S. Congress when it has to vote this summer on continued most favored nation status for the People's Republic of China?
Actually, my position on MFN renewal has consistently been, don't revoke it. The first time I had to consider that was May 1990. It's just 1 year after Tiananmen Square, when the matter was extremely controversial at the time. And I discussed with my party members for long hours. And we came up with this decision that we would like to see the US government renew MFN for China. But we, of course, wish to see China to improve her own human rights records for her own people. This time, when I was in Washington, D.C. last week, I was consistent and I lobbied strongly against imposing conditions or revoking MFN. I give you a little example. So you see this man there brutally assaulting his own son. And you say, look, I'm going to teach that man a lesson, assuming you're the bigger guy, of course. But as you walk towards him, the son is standing up for father. What do you do now? Knock down the son first before you teach his father a lesson? Hong Kong is the son. And if MFN is not renewed, Hong Kong gets hit first, and badly hit. Information.
Yeah, like what's going on in Hong Kong after the middle of next year.
Well, actually, there shouldn't be any problem when it comes to information on the Hill. Because in 1992, just before President Bush stepped out of the White House, he signed a bill into law, and it's called the Hong Kong, the U.S. Hong Kong Policy Act. Don't feel bad if you haven't heard of it. Because even some members of the Congress haven't heard of it. It is a very interesting act of Congress. It entirely supports the Joint Declaration, and indeed it is built on it, because it supports the return of Hong Kong to the PRC on the 1st of July 1997. But in keeping with the one country, two systems policy, it requires the US government to treat Hong Kong separately from China. For example, textile quotas. There must be two textile quotas, one given to the PRC and one given to Hong Kong, even though after 1997, Hong Kong will be part of China. Otherwise, the Beijing leaders may give the entire quota to Shanghai. After all, many Beijing leaders come from Shanghai. So Hong Kong will end up having nothing. So this is the whole concept behind it. But at the same time, this act of Congress commits the US government to support democracy, human rights, and the rule of law, and requires the State Department to submit annual report on Hong Kong to the Congress. So the Congress would have a report. And indeed, the most recent report was submitted just about a week ago. So the information is there. But perhaps you ask whether other people here could have information. Now, I'm happy to tell you that the Hong Kong question has now attracted much more attention of the mass media in your country. Many of your national newspapers have established offices in Hong Kong. I can tell you one Wednesday morning, about a month ago, I had 8 programs lined up for that morning, beginning with an interview by an Hungarian television station, followed by a Polish television team, a journalist from the UK, radio, Canadian radio broadcasting, Australian television, French television, German radio. People are paying a lot of attention to Hong Kong. So you'll be seeing and hearing more about Hong Kong as we get closer to 1997. Well, there is, of course, a British garrison stationed in Hong Kong. And the only reason for that is in case there is invasion from some quarters, and you know where. It is true, but that is a small garrison. And in any event, the largest garrison the British armed government can provide cannot withstand invasion for... You mean U.S.? A Hong Kong garrison? Well, I think Hong Kong garrison is not going to be of any use, because we have only 6 million, assuming all 6 million become soldiers. So what? They've got 1.2 billion. But you do see a point there. When the Joint Declaration was first announced, one leading statesman in our part of the world, in Southeast Asia, wrote a letter congratulating the then British ambassador to the PRC, congratulating him for having used every word in the English language that inspires confidence, but saying that this is a masterpiece of wizardry, because there is no army to enforce it. And the PLA People's Liberation Army will be stationed in Hong Kong. So you have a point there. I was surprised. Perhaps I shouldn't be. I was surprised because the Joint Declaration did promise us all these things. And we have nothing else to put our hope on except the Joint Declaration. And the Chinese government has kept on reminding us that it wishes the Joint Declaration to be implemented to the full. And a lot of people believe that Hong Kong is the example for Taiwan because China's proposal to solve the Taiwan question is also one country, two systems, except that the Taiwan government can keep its army and navy. And some people also believe that China is not going to let the goose die because it is the goose that lays golden eggs. But once I saw the war games played so close to Taiwan, I was no longer surprised. Because that shows that the Beijing leaders are clearly taking the hardest possible line. And the policy on Hong Kong is perfectly consistent with the policy on Taiwan. Your second question was, I'm sorry? Stable transition, difficult to tell. But my party, which is the largest and most popular party in Hong Kong, will not lead our people to use force against the incoming sovereign. We do not believe in the use of force. But whether the people themselves, when suppressed, will simply accept meekly everything, I can't tell. As for the economy, as I said, once the basis of a sound economy is gone, it is like a house with its foundation.
Terrible things happening. Now, you just mentioned to me what the essential reality is. The value of Hong Kong is its people. It has no natural resources, no great territory. Why isn't more serious thought being given to a mass emigration? The people are the value. If the people move someplace else, and I can't remember, but there's some South Sea archipelago that supposedly is asking or opening to give citizenship, is there any consideration to a mass migration and let the communist Chinese have a bunch of empty rocks? I mean, the people are the value.
True. I think you have in mind the Fiji, Tonkin, yeah. I think Fiji too are attracting our people. But of course, I mean, it was suggested some years ago by a Scotsman, of course, that why doesn't Scotland set aside one island and let all the people of Hong Kong settle there? But it won't work. Hong Kong is right on the coast of China. So that is the hinterland behind it. And because China, until recently, had closed its doors to the outside world, Hong Kong was the only door through which, or the window, through which China has contact with the outside world. and the renminbi is only convertible through the Hong Kong dollar. So all these things come naturally and help to make Hong Kong the success story that it is today. Remove the people into an island, or if possible, if Superman can be asked to push the whole island to somewhere else, then Hong Kong loses the natural advantage that it has. So I don't like to see too many people leave Hong Kong, quite frankly, because I want to see Hong Kong to continue to be a success. My ambition is to hope that China will also one day go in the same direction that we would like Hong Kong to go. China is a big nation. It's a big country. I want it to become a great nation, a great country, where human rights are respected, when there is the rule of law, to stamp out corruption. And when China follows the rules of the game in her relations with the outside world. I don't want Hong Kong to die when the lifeblood of the people is drained out of it.
I think maybe you've answered that. I see you standing there and looking so brave, but you have a year and 2 months and a couple of days, and I wonder about your personal safety, speaking out like this, and your family, and how you're going to handle this.
Well, I can't tell what will happen to me in 1997, or 1st of July, except that I'll be in Hong Kong.
You will stay.
I will definitely stay, because Martin Lee is not my problem. Martin Lee is their problem.
Recently, I heard Frankie Leung, the Los Angeles lawyer, at a seminar at Stanford, and he predicted the possibility of what he called the Singaporeization of Hong Kong by the Chinese government. What he meant by that was that he said Singapore had a very good rule of law as far as business is concerned. It wasn't up to what we would call a standard of human rights, but that there was a functioning economy, a growing economy. What do you think of the idea of Singaporeization as a solution?
China likes that. China sees in Singapore a better success story than Hong Kong, because the Singaporeans are all easily controlled by Lee Kuan Yew. So China would like to see a Beijing-appointed chief executive exerting a sort of control over the Hong Kong people like Lee Kuan Yew does to his own people. But when you look at Singapore, do you see press freedom there? Actually, China likes press freedom, just as Singapore's ruler, Lee Kuan Yew, likes press freedom. I'm not drunk. But you must use the word press as a verb. Press. They like that. But it won't work. Because in Hong Kong, the people have already seen democracy at work, albeit that it was introduced very late in the day. And the flame of democracy, once ignited, will never be extinguished, because it shines in the hearts of men and women. It may be hidden for a time, but it will come back. And when it does so, it shines even more brightly than ever before. We don't want the Singapore example. You go to Singapore, you buy a newspaper, you won't read it. Just as you won't read newspapers in Beijing, because it's all propaganda.
Mr. Mr. Lee, you indicated earlier that you were opposed to the revocation of MFN status for the People's Republic of China. And as you know, this argument has come up for 7 years now since the Tiananmen Square massacre, and each year we've been told that through more trade and interaction, the situation will improve in China. And each year MFN has been renewed, and the situation has seemed to have deteriorated in China. And it seems to me, at least, that this seems to be the major means or leverage the United States has with this $30 billion trade deficit that we're running with China. It's a major source of funds they have for doing many things. And if that is removed from the table as a source of leverage with China in terms of improving their behavior, not only with Hong Kong, but with missile proliferation, with their attitude towards Taiwan and other things, what is the means of leverage one has with China to use if not that? And how do you persuade China to change their behavior if we've not succeeded for the last 7 years with the policies we've been pursuing?
I think the policy on China, whatever it is, or the bottom line, whatever it is, or the leverage, whatever it is, has to be perceived by China to be a resolute one. In other words, you say it, you mean it. And if your threat, if you like, is seen to be wavering, then you won't get the desired result. Rightly or wrongly, MFN was for many years seen to be linked to human rights in China. And then it was delinked. And there was nothing else demanded of the Chinese government except that thou shalt treat your people better. Now, you can imagine what the leaders in Beijing will say. Oh, wonderful, human rights and MFN are now delinked. What is there to worry us anymore? That is why it failed, in my view. But unfortunately, the way forward is not to use MFN as a threat, because it's too simplistic, too easy perhaps. But then it kills Hong Kong first. And when that happens, China will no longer find it necessary or indeed desirable to treat Hong Kong differently. Why should there be one country, two systems then? If the goose is dead, why not just one country, one system?
Mr. Lee, I come from a former communist country, and I lived under Czech Republic, and I lived as a child under communism. Part of the communist agenda was the atomization of society, weakening families, putting children against parents, dividing the families from within. We all know about the strength of Hong Kong family and Asian family in general. But what is your, what do you think about the future of your family tradition, if it will have to face the communist threat from China?
I agree with you. Well, the Chinese traditional thinking and indeed philosophy is always that the family is the basic unit of the society that we live in. That is also very Confucius. And communists, of course, believe in breaking up anything because it wants the total dedication of the people to the state. So religion is seen to be an enemy, because then you have another ruler, thought to be mightier than even the Communist Party. So they don't like that. Family, they don't like, because then there's devotion to your parents, whatever, to your family members. They don't like it. But I think in Hong Kong, communism has no market at all. because the great majority of the Chinese people living in Hong Kong are there because they've run away from this repressive communist regime. Many, having seen the atrocities committed by the communists, or are children born of such parents. So communism has certainly no disciples in Hong Kong. And I don't think, quite frankly, communism is actually surviving in China either. See, they no longer talk about communism. The word is not used anymore. They use the word socialism, but they immediately add with Chinese characteristics. Well, that means capitalism. Now, I don't see the clock in China being set back, because now the people have seen wealth, perhaps not money in their own pockets, at least money in other people's pockets. They know what it is. In the early days of communism, of course, is sharing other people's wealth. So they were very happy to share the landowner's properties. But when everything is shared, they are nothing. But at least they stuck together when there was no money. They were not corrupt. Well, without money, without wealth, how can you be corrupt? So, but now, because of the open economic policy, which was thanks to Deng Xiaoping, people now have money. So I don't think they will go back. So I agree with you, the family is important. I agree with you, the communists would like to break it up. I doubt very much if they will succeed in Hong Kong. One more question, please.
Hello, Mr. Li. I was wondering if there was an individual right to own firearms, guns, in Hong Kong.
Nobody is allowed to carry a gun except when you're a member of the gun club and you keep your guns there. Thank you very much for that simple question.